You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. California lawmakers have introduced more than 2,000 bills so far this year, and many are going through jam-packed committee hearings. During these hearings, paid lobbyists, activist organizations, and the general public are allowed to testify in support or against a bill. But securing that time to talk is not guaranteed. And on many occasions, everyday people who travel long distances to testify get cut off after a few seconds. Here's an example of what we're talking about.
Kathy Zollinger, I work with bears every day in assembly.
I gotta ask you just to keep it to a
I'm strongly opposed.
Thank you.
That is something that Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald and CalMatters digital democracy reporter Ryan Sabalo join us and have been working on with their reporting on the challenges of the general public, everyday Californians, to weigh in and shape legislation. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Hey, Vicky.
So I'd like to just start by walking through the ways that Californians can participate and weigh in on the legislative process. I don't want to take for granted that like everyone understands like how this works. Mm-hmm. So once bills are filed, when can people voice their support or their opposition? Ryan?
Well, so you could send a letter. You could call your lawmaker. You can, you know, try to meet them in the district. But if you want to go in and testify, it typically works. So you have a committee hearing. They usually allow two speakers for, two speakers against. They typically, each of those two people generally only get about 2 minutes. And then afterwards, they allow members of the public to come up and say, state their name, their title, and their position on a bill. And that's it. So you might have 40 bills on an agenda, and you're limited to just very, very short snippets of public testimony.
Okay. And so when you talk about like the two people can testify for, two people against, is that a lead witness testimony?
Yes, that's what they call those, yeah.
And then what are the Me Toos?
The Me Toos are the people who get to come up and state their name, title, and position on a bill.
Just like, I support or I oppose.
Yep. And if you go over that testimony, they'll cut you off.
As we heard in
that
one.
That was a Me Too.
That was a Me Too soundbite. Okay. Laura, so who are the different types of people or groups that typically provide testimonies? You're at the Capitol a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, the important thing to note is really anybody can, but it's usually people who are professional lobbyists who are paid to represent special interest groups, whether that's corporations or other types of campaigns, things like that. But you do have a lot of, you know, everyday people that travel to the Capitol, maybe because of personal experience or something like that, and something catches their eye and, you know, they feel driven to speak up on it. So it's mostly professional lobbyists, but you have all sorts of, you know, grassroots organizers doing lobby days, that sort of thing. But anybody can come to committee and testify.
So how can people testify? Can they call in?
No. That's not allowed anymore. It was allowed during COVID, but that is no longer in the rules of the Assembly and Senate.
Okay. So then I would imagine that that potentially can create some logistical challenges and barriers. I mean, what have you learned and witnessed, Laura, just going to the Capitol, covering committee hearing after committee hearing and seeing this play out in real life?
Yeah, especially now that they've gotten rid of remote testimony where you could call in on the phone lines, it means that people who want to participate in these hearings sometimes have to travel really long distances to get to the Capitol. Maybe they're taking a day off work or bringing their kids with them or something like that, just to have, like Ryan said, like a few seconds to really weigh in on a bill that's important to them.
Yeah. Well, Ryan, when did you start noticing or even looking into these challenges for the general public to be part of the lawmaking process in this way, in person to testify?
So I'm a relative newcomer to the Capitol. I've only been covering it for about a year and a half. And so I work for CalMatters, and we have this really cool system called Digital Democracy. It's a database that tracks every word spoken in the legislature. And so part of my job is going through these transcripts and going through these hearings. And I noticed that this kept happening. And I'm used to covering local governments. I started out as a local government reporter. And it's very different than at a city council, where you typically, if you show up at a city council meeting and want to testify on something on the agenda, they give you 3 minutes and you at least get to say something, right? This is very different. And so I started picking up on this. And so I asked the person that his name's Hans, who does all the transcription management for us, to just keep an eye on this stuff. And he was the one who flagged most of those examples in my most recent story where we looked at how people kept getting cut off.
And we're going to play some of those examples. But before we do that, when you talk to lawmakers, both of you, I mean, what is the justification or the reasoning for doing things in this way?
Well, they introduce 2,000 bills a year, and that's a lot. And they're only in session for a certain amount of time, and they tend to wait till the last minute to do everything. And so you have all of these hearings kind of stacked up on top of each other. Oftentimes, you'll have double booked. Lawmakers will be in three different committee hearings or something at the same time. And so they're trying to jam all this stuff in and get through all of this legislation.
Yeah. And do you see this firsthand at the Capitol, Laura?
Totally. There's so many things on every agenda, you know, and there's always, you know, it gets just gridlocked, like usually like in April and then like end of session, we kind of see it again with this committee hearing process. The other thing I'll say is back when they, a few years ago, when they were allowing remote testimony and you could call in on the phone lines, I mean, I think it's fair to say there was like visible frustration for committee chairs, like dealing with an operator. And it was just kind of a time suck. Like there were a lot of logistical hurdles for them to go through. Sometimes the person would be muted or some, you know, we all relate to the Zoom and phone challenges from COVID. But, you know, that was something else that was undeniable.
And I would think there would be some instances if one bill took a lot of time that would actually undercut, you know, another bill and the time that it could receive because, you know, you only have 24 hours in a day, and they're obviously not sleeping there.
Sure. So. And, you know, they're trying to make it so that the hearings don't last until midnight or, you know, which we actually had a few weeks ago. Some of those hearings, particularly the Senate Judiciary, drug on almost till 11 o'clock. And so they're trying to jam everybody, all this in into a very short window. And there's just a lot going on over there.
Laura, you recently shared reporting on this. I mean, what examples stood out to you? That
yeah.
Make you want to do a story on it.
I was really interested, especially like because, you know, we're like peak budget season right now in the Capitol. And so I was particularly interested in like how advocates who are maybe grassroots advocates who aren't paid to be at the Capitol on a weekly basis, daily basis, how they advocate for money funding that they need in the budget. And so there's this one group, Parent Voices, that I was particularly interested in. They're like grassroots organizers, parents, families, and they come to the Capitol to advocate for, among a lot of things, more childcare funding, which is what they're doing this year. And a lot of these people have to take a day off work. And some of them even like got on flights to come up from Southern California. They brought their kids with them because maybe they didn't have somebody to watch them. And a lot of these people maybe only had like, you know, in the Me Too context, like they only had like 5 seconds to give their name and, you know, basically like affiliation and position on the bill. So I think that's quite something, you know, these people who are not paid to be there don't have the opportunity to just call in.
When you talk to them, were they satisfied with the process after going through it?
I think they realize that it's that, and then also meeting with lawmakers, if they're able to get a meeting with a lawmaker, that's really all they can do, you know? And I think a lot of people feel that showing their face or having their voice heard is different than just submitting a letter to a committee. You can actually stand in front of somebody or speak to somebody and say, this is how I feel and this is how it impacted me. So that was kind of the sense that I got.
The other thing that's worth pointing out, I think, is, you know, these groups that have paid lobbyists also tend to donate money to these politicians. You know, they have the fundraiser dinners, you know, they do all these sorts of things. That buys those people, those groups, access that I think a regular person wouldn't have. And that's sort of the kind of the inequities of public citizen lobbying
yeah,
over there.
Absolutely.
Well, let's get into some of those regular people. This was from the Digital Democracy Database, was part of your reporting, Ryan. Let's start off with Albert Tittman Sr. Tell us about him before we listen to what happened.
So this was a cannabis bill that Albert showed up at the, he's a Native American gentleman. He feels that this bill would be detrimental to disenfranchised, impoverished Native American communities. And he showed up, he really wanted to be one of the lead witnesses, but all he got was Me Too.
Let's take a listen.
Historically, our people have been devastated in many ways by illegal grow operations on our reservation.
Thank you very much.
And I appreciate the Prop 64 and legalization and this funding to this point, because it's really helped us,
sir,
in our community and our organization.
I apologize. We're at the point of there have been two members, two witnesses in primary opposition. Now we're just at the name, organization, and position on the bill.
I understand that, but
sir, thank you very much.
There's not one Native person. Not one Native person.
If you have additional comments that you'd like to make, you can absolutely submit a letter to the committee with more opposition. Thank you. We just have to have the rules be the same for everybody.
Yeah, and you can hear Albert in the backdrop, but when not in front of the mic, saying there hasn't been one Native person who's been able to weigh in on this. What did he say to you afterward?
Well, it should be noted that they actually called the sergeant in arms over. That's the Capitol security person, and they basically shooed him away from there. Albert was frustrated. Albert felt like, you know, one of the things he said in the interview with me was that, you know, he's used to going to city council meetings and things like that, where he could have his couple minutes to say what he wanted to say, and they didn't. And he just felt like, you know, they basically told him to shut up.
Yeah. I mean, and I understand what the rules are, but even optically, like, that looks rude. How do lawmakers respond to the optics of things like that unfolding?
They say they do their best to try to accommodate everybody. Like I said, I mean, part of it is just a feature of them introducing 2,000 bills a year. And the other thing I think that's worth pointing out is in Sacramento, they very, very rarely vote no on the measures that are up. And so there's, a legitimate complaint that these hearings are mostly performative anyway, since everybody kind of knows how the vote's going to shake down, except in very rare circumstances.
So, Laura, you also have an example of this. Tell us about William Abrams and the argument that he's raising.
Yeah, back in March, I was just covering a committee hearing. It was like an informational oversight hearing on homeowners insurance and people that are losing it because of fire risk in certain parts of the state. And I was talking with William Abrams just about, he lost his home in the Tubbs Fire in the Santa Rosa area back in 2017. And so now he comes to these committee hearings to kind of advocate for insurance reform. And when I talked with him, I was just talking to him about his experience with the insurance market, but he actually brought up that it was like a Wednesday, and he was like, I had to take off an afternoon to come up here because this is important to me. And so he brought up the fact that, you know, the legislature not having remote testimony as an option anymore is really a challenge for him. This is what he said.
What really makes this advocacy work really difficult is that the legislature has recently shut off the phone lines and not allowed public comment remotely. There are wildfire survivors across our state who cannot have their voices heard in these committee hearings. If you are a wildfire survivor in the Los Angeles area, you cannot fly in from LA into Sacramento and participate in these hearings. And accepting written letters is not the same as actively participating in the committee hearings. So largely what we see in these committee hearings are paid lobbyists to represent special interests. And so rarely do the committee members get to understand in a more fulsome way what the public is going through.
I imagine, Laura, that these concerns and this criticism has been brought to lawmakers. How do they respond to this?
I think it's pretty mixed. I mean, like in the clip that Ryan provided, you hear the assembly member there saying there has to be the same rules for everybody. You know, it's an issue of fairness, and counting the minutes is one way of, like, concrete way of them being able to do that. But when I was doing some reporting on this, you know, in the budget context, I asked Democratic Assembly Member Corey Jackson about this. He chairs the Budget Subcommittee on Human Services, and he actually said he thinks that there should be an opportunity, you know, for remote testimony to continue. This is what he said.
I truly believe that we should continue to provide opportunities for people to participate virtually, because we're dealing with some of the most marginalized and historically oppressed populations. But at this point, our rules do not allow it. Mm.
You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. And if you're just joining us, I'm talking with Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald and CalMatters digital democracy reporter Ryan Sabolo about the reporting on the challenges of the general public to weigh in and testify on legislation, and oftentimes getting cut off. Okay, so as both of you laid out, you have lobbyists and others. They frequent the Capitol, so they really know how it works, right? But the general public, as we now understanding, is may not know that. So is there like a guidebook or a 101 for people to best prepare themselves if they want to testify, especially if they're going to be traveling hours long distances, hopping on a plane to do so?
Formally, no. But what I will say is I think what a lot of advocates will do is if there's an issue they're really passionate about, there's usually an advocacy group that is working to organize folks who want to come to the Capitol to talk about something. So that's one way that I think is like a vein of entry into the participating in the democratic process. But in terms of an actual guidebook, not that I'm aware of.
I mean, because I understand what the rules are, but I mean, that doesn't create like a good experience among constituents if you're spending all that money and that time and arranging childcare in some instances, taking time off work, and then having this happen and not really understanding or being better prepared on the front end.
Yeah, I might suggest one of the advocates I spoke to in my story mentioned that she tells her fellow advocates who are kind of new to the game is you're going to have more access to your local lawmaker in their district. And so, you know, see if they have an event, you know, try to meet them in the district when they're not in session. And I would also probably suggest, this is just me thinking out loud here, but, you know, call your local lawmaker, say, hey, I'm interested in this, and see if you can get a staffer on the phone to try to walk you through how to, what, where this is at in the process and that sort of thing. They tend to, I would imagine, I don't know this for sure, but I would guess that they're going to be fairly responsive to a local constituent who wants to try to advocate at the Capitol personally. So
yeah, and you do have an example of this, this kind of disconnect of understanding the rules with a woman named Erin Friday. So tell us about her before we listen to what happened.
So Erin Friday is part of a group that was there to oppose a bill that would make it easier for transgender people to change their names on estate documents. She showed up at the Assembly Health Committee to be, presumably, she thought she was going to be one of the lead opponents, one of the folks who actually get the 2 minutes. And committee chair, Mia Bonta, declined to let her speak.
AB 1084 perpetuates the lie
ma'am?
That any...
Are you from PERC?
Am I from PERC? No, I'm from Our Duty.
Okay. You have not registered opposition on this bill, therefore we cannot testify. Are you from PERC?
According to the rules, which I read, there's no requirement that one needs to register for opposition. Can you point that?
I was very clear, and the rules that the Health Committee adopted indicated that we needed to have registered opposition offering witness testimony, and I reiterated that at the beginning of this hearing.
Okay, so there isn't like a civics guidebook, but is this common in other states? Is this kind of just standard practice? Is it?
Well, Erin, who testifies all over the place on various trans-related bills, said that she's, you know, never had seen this sort of restrictions on public comment in the various other states that she's been to. That was kind of a weird case, though. Are you familiar with any hearing not allowing lead opposition witnesses?
You know, it's weird. I think some, like you said, this is a very orchestrated process. You usually know how it's going to shake out before it happens. So I think in that sense, some committees do adopt their own rules for how they want to conduct their hearings. But as an advocate, it's probably hard to keep track of that.
Yeah, and in that case, Erin argued that, well, you may have said that at the beginning of this hearing, but I drove all the way over from San Francisco to testify. I didn't see it on the website, so how am I supposed to know that I have to register formal opposition before you're going to allow me to be lead witness?
Yeah. Finally, this is a quick question. 2,000 plus bills. I mean, it can seem a lot to people, you know, to everyday Californians to fit into a legislative session. How does that stack up to prior years? Because lawmakers have been trying to curb this, right?
Yeah. And so they did introduce a slight cap. I forget the exact numbers. It's like a handful fewer bills per lawmaker this year. We've seen a little bit fewer bills introduced so far this year. I think the real test is going to be next year because this cap, so the legislature runs in 2-year sessions. And so it'll be interesting to see if next year there are fewer bills, because right now I think they may have jammed most of their bills in at the beginning as opposed to the end.
So. Yeah. Laura, it just seems kind of dizzying when you're at the Capitol,
I would imagine. Totally. No. Lots of spreadsheets trying to keep track of where all these bills are headed, where they're coming from and where they're headed to. It's difficult.
Well, Laura and Ryan, thank you so much
for stopping by.
Thanks, Vicky.
Cap Radio politics reporter Laura Fitzgerald and CalMatters digital reporter Ryan Sabalow have been discussing their reporting on the challenges of the general public to weigh in and testify on legislation, and at times getting cut off after just a couple of seconds. Still ahead, your opportunity to meet some of your favorite authors happens this weekend. We're going to learn more about the Sacramento Book Festival. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.